just funny, funny little figments run through my brain, and I don't even have a way to grip them or send them to behavioral modification therapy. These little figments just ambush me when I'm trying to read.
Shelf pinnacled me or Tums.
you know, really care about your stomach, your post-brachium, but I want to belong. So I joined the 4-H Club for Gay Hoofers, and guess who was there? Una O'Neill and Nicole Kidman. Good Nicole, not bad Nicole. Like Moon Nicole versus Apollo Nicole. But Moon isn't versus Apollo. What is the Harlequin romance equivalent of Friends, Romans, Countrymen? To stretch one's arms across the public domain. Why do shrinks, even when off duty, refuse warmth and ebullience? Or do I specialize in non-ebullient shrinks? Was dead woman's word. We shared tidbit and also transcendent, and now she's dead, and I never told her. We shared tidbit and transcendent. Trying to prove that I was Jewish. Lift her wedding dress and walk at rush hour past Penn Station, stretched out like her dead nurse mother, whose malt milk taste I still can't fathom. Mother whose car we wrecked in stop and go traffic on Route 2, Mitchell the Third or the Oresteia. Reaching toward narrative, but not necessarily approving of the reach. Which Kafka was I glad to meet in Mykonos dream? Or a matinee opera that might not exist, like La Bouillabaisse. A long river cutting through it. A long river cutting through metal. A good river, bad okay. Conversion to frivolity. Conversion to frivolity. Reunion cakewalk for retiring kindergarten teacher who expresses recognition when seeing me. Thank you. splat and pink by emigration of rival color.
Indeed.
like my mother's ex. I love triangulating via unwise confessions. Morton Feldman. Once my mother's friend. Is that phantom property?
Difficult to answer. Apart from my transitional object here, need. Did I write the poems first? Well, when I write the poems, I'm definitely using my fingertips. When I write the poems, I'm definitely counting syllables on my fingers and doing weird things with pattern and emphasis. Definitely counting syllables, mallarmé, pied-à-terre, etc. But the music comes much later, if at all. And in fact, I've only done this peculiar kind of performance 3 or 4 times in my life. Usually when I do this, you see, there's all this music out here. I mean, gorgeous stuff by the masters, like Germaine Taillefer. Thank you. whose politics were dicey. Instead, I'm gonna think about Montserrat Caballé doing her duet with Freddie Mercury. What a great day that was for Barcelona. But seriously, do you know that Germaine Taillefer, who wrote this piece, was the only woman in that group of composers known as Les Sikhs?
Billy, don't hate me for going so far off.
I feel that was an answer.
It was an answer. I really was trying to describe, really, you know, where music comes in after words and all that. I'll give a briefer answer if another person asks, because it's so important that somebody asks something. David.
Are there songs of the 20th century pop music canon that you go home and you play by yourself and you sing and feel emotionally cathartic about?
Other than Over the Rainbow, obviously, that's not really, that's the 19th century canon. Let me really think about it. No, I love listening to them. But until very recently, my entire relationship to the piano was without words and through a kind of non-relational ballet of tap fingertip stuff, a fun little language thing, but no, I don't. But if I were to, it would probably be. It would probably be this. I'm not going to do it. Just do it. Just for like, it would probably be T for two, and U for me, and U for me, and U for me. But it's really more like Veron. This is Lucia. Alexandre Tansman, and I'm going to start to answer. And Mazurka by a guy that I had never heard of until I was looking for music to play at something like this. So, Alexandre Tansman. How many people have heard of Alexandre Tansman? Nope. So, Alexandre Tansman was killed again by your indifference. Was because Charlie Chaplin and Arthur Rubinstein and Picasso and a lot of other people wrote a letter. So you could say that Alexandra Tonsman would have been killed by somebody, but perhaps it's maudlin to reach that far back. But he wasn't killed. He lived to write more music than maybe anyone ever in France has ever written. Heard of him. So I was also thinking about Francesca Woodman, who killed herself, or of Sylvia Plath, who killed herself. You know the list. Unica Zern, you know. The question, Jeff, remains unanswered, because I'm hanging out in the fringes of the question, dealing with people spectacularly murdered and people who internalize the enmity of the death wish floating all around them and just kill themselves. But Plath and Woodman are famous. How about another question right here from the piano? It will be very brief, I promise you.
Yes. Poets of no interest to you. 100% no interest.
Do you want me to name them?
it's an open question.
Yeah, poet of no interest to me. Carl Sandburg. Coventry Patmore. And a lot of people who published books of poetry in 1949. Let's call them the Alexandra Tonsmans, Tonsmen of their era. The thing about, the reason I have to answer the question somewhat facetiously is because if you gave me a poem by Carl Sandburg, I would love to turn it into something of my own. Two more questions.
I'll start here this time, just in case you're afraid of my prosthesis. I feel that. See how it would be.
I have a question.
A very sober answer this time for Jenny, Jasmine, whom I thank for inviting me to the Story Institute in the footsteps of Hilton Alls and Carolee Schneeman.
This is a question appropriated from Barbara Walters. It's the last question that she asks her guests, which is, what about yourself do you feel is most misunderstood?
That I sometimes know when I'm being funny, and I sometimes, when I write, I'm a little aware that something is funny, but most of the time, I'm unaware of it at all. The first time I ever gave a poetry reading, people were laughing, and I found it very liberating because I hadn't ever thought that my poems were funny. It was a complete revelation that they were kind of funny. And it still is the case that when I write, I never laugh at anything I write. I don't think anything, humor is not an aim or even part of my own response to what I write. I admit when I'm doing something like this or when there's a performance, because there's an interchange with an audience, I am aware if I'm, I don't say trying to be funny, but I'm used to a way of being utterly myself and really, really pedantically serious, but understanding that most people will think it's funny. And so maybe I exaggerate some of the aspects of my seriousness that will frame it as funniness, because then it enters the world a little more readily. But that that's, so I would say, I don't want to be necessarily thought of as a ponderous, you know, poster child of the death drive kind of thing, but I don't, so whenever, even if somebody says, oh, I'm really interested in the role of humor in the Iliad, I just say, humor is an ugly word. I hate the word humor. It reminds me of Reader's Digest, like, laughter is the best medicine, or in these United States, sliced in half, or all those, you know, But I do know when I get excited by a word or by a new piece of information. And I know that I've also learned that other people usually find that information offensive, obscene, or funny. So, I guess that's misunderstood. One more question. On East 65th Street, I don't want to leave East 65th Street. No. Person with the blue shirt, are you raising your hand? No.
Oh, I was.
Okay, you were.
What was your first piano teacher like?
Oh, I love that. Okay. What was your first piano teacher like?
I never had one.
Okay. Lynn McConaughey had a mother, let's just call her Ellen McConaughey. They lived together in a house. Lynn was about 4'11", very provocative. Lynn took me once driving in her Carmen Ghia and played me Janis Joplin. Oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? So Lynn taught me some really high points. And she impressed me because she played the Brahms first. She played the Brahms first piano concerto in D minor with the San Jose State Symphony Orchestra, and when she did, she was so little that for the octaves, she and she also told me that she was taking Valium for a week before her performance. But I mentioned her mother. Her mother was amazing because they had a feud. They were both piano teachers. But Lynn was so much more talented. Also, I should tell you that the mother had a bouffant hairdo that went up like that, and she had a wall. They had a wall around their house. It was a moat. They lived on a street named Happy Valley. And I actually make reference to them in Camp Marmalade. I say, can't measure the moods, fault lining Happy Valley. But finally, this is the pièce de résistance. Lynn set me up with my next piano teacher, who was her teacher, who was a goddess of pianism, who had studied with Dame Myra Hess, which is big. But Lynn got married, which the maestro, the larger piano teacher here, said was a big mistake. Lynn got married, guess who she got married to? A guy named Wayne. I went to the wedding. It was so amazing because you know what Lynn said? Lynn said, you're all invited to the consummation. Then, you know what happened? Wayne became a producer of a TV show. It was called, like, Piano Variety Hour. And Lynn died maybe 10 years ago, but she lived into her maybe 40s or 50s as sort of a kind of glass menagerie figurine wheeled out occasionally to perform on Wayne's piano variety hour. When I was in graduate school studying fiction writing, I thought I would write a novel about all my piano teachers, because there's nothing more deep than a piano teacher. So why don't we call it quits? If you want to buy a book, buy it, please. Or a record, that's even more important to me. Buy a record. And I'll see you all at the consummation.